Part 3. Smarter than the average.
Chapter 9. Recovered data archive. Quote, honey, end quote.
It looks as though I've overextended. Even if I'd have been myself, simultaneously invading two complex biotech systems and exerting control over them would have taxed me, let alone when I am just a copy, and also trying to hold on to slippery little Jimmy Martin. And then there's the sensory feedback. I can't exactly say I'd forgotten, more like I haven't got around to unpacking those memories, or perhaps I don't have them in here with me at all. Surplus to requirements when I got sent over. But suddenly I am awash with bear, drowning in it. The smells of this place, even through the thin air. The colors that are flat and dull compared to Jimmy's eyes, but familiar and comforting for all that. The sheer biofeedback of having a bear's glorious, powerful body, and still strong and quick like I was when I had come off the factory line, boosted and powerful. And I lose it, let Jimmy slip through my clawed fingers, drop all the memories I've been hoarding, and Jimmy takes his moment and leaves me picking up the pieces inside his mind. He may think he banjaxed me with some half-cocked denial of service nonsense, but really it's just the bareness of it all, and how I miss it. Being a disembodied simulation inside a human's head is no way the same thing as being me. And I plunge into the memories and try to reassemble them in a way that tells me what's going on. Why the urgency? Why send a piece of myself to Mars? Because surely there was an easier way to talk to bees. Except I was in trouble. That seems right. Even before the meeting with Aslan, I'd been in trouble. The dogs had been closing in. But I remember all those doctorates, the public speaking, the White House lunch. What went wrong? This. It was at a conference. Being at a conference, it wasn't some hugely dramatic thing. I didn't run amok or eat the ambassador's wife or scale the Empire State Building with a screaming dean of liberal studies clutched in my paw. It was just a speech. And after the speech, a lot of people for whom I'd been an amiable dancing bear they could safely trot out to amuse their families decided that actually I wasn't so funny after all. And it was a mistake. But I'd grown complacent in my dancing and had forgotten that just because you can't see the bars doesn't mean there isn't a cage you're supposed to stay in. I did a lot of conferences. I had 9 doctorates, after all, and was something of a celebrity. I attended symposiums on poverty, equality, biotech, AI, and all manner of offshoots. Sometimes I'd give a talk, keynote speaker, once or twice. Sometimes I'd be on a panel with some similarly well-doctored types discussing some aspect of whatever the spécialité du jour was. Well, usually the same aspect. So, I'd be at a conference about human rights issues, which I considered my serious work, and naturally I'd get to talk about rights as they applied to bioforms, and that would be fair enough, because I had, after all, made a public career of pushing for those from quite early on. I was just about the mascot of the bioform rights lobby. After poor sainted Rex. Anyway, who, conveniently for a figurehead, was dead and therefore not liable to eventually say something politically inconvenient at a conference. And then a month later, I'd be at a conference on some of the finer points of the organic headwear interface, and they'd get me up to talk about, well, the pioneering work done by dumb animals in the field, given that we'd been the first to experience what was now a common human thing. And maybe I'd asked, back when I applied to be a speaker, if I couldn't get in on the discussion about headwear security or the social aspects of interconnectivity, because those sounded like interesting topics to weigh in on. But when the schedule came back, it was bioforms or nothing, and so I'd take what I was given. Looking back, organizing the shards of my mind-stored data as I am, I am surprised it took me so many years to clock the pattern. And then there would be a literature conference, and I just put out a paper on representation of the other in Beowulf. Fascinating, really, given that both the titular character and his nemesis are othered in radically different ways. And I'd find myself on a panel alongside my old friend Chani Upaur, the cat model poet with a new book out, and some supremely arch literature critic from the Washington Post. And we'd be talking about what bioform experience brings to the oeuvre, or, if I was really lucky, something to do with animals in the great American novel. And I don't know if you're starting to see something of a pattern here, or... And I'd remark in the bar afterwards, or over my link on some private group channel with colleagues, that really, I was in a position to make contributions on subjects not tethered to the fact of my native state. And they'd all agree wholeheartedly and mildly dress down the organizers. And then the next conference or literature festival or some such event would come along and there would be me, listed to talk about the bioform in contemporary drama. If a lion could talk, as the saying goes, could we understand him? Apparently, the answer was only if the lion wants to talk about the representation of big cats in Renaissance art. And then came a big deal. An international conference on corporate and political theory, and I just had a mostly unrelated book out and was therefore celebrity enough to get invited over. And there I was with a slot on a roundtable discussion on the emerging phenomenon of bioform-driven business solutions, as though we were mushrooms suddenly turning up on the lawn after a brisk autumn rain. But they also gave me a talk slot. I had something lined up about chains of command, authority, and servitude, and it was a bit edgy, practically racy for that conference, but they were apparently willing for me to push the envelope a bit in the name of publicity. There would be media there, recording it all. It brought them attention to have one of the old-school bioforms talking about liberty, who had been rolled out into a war zone with a master and a hierarchy in my head. A collar, as the modern euphemism is for slavery. And they mostly got the speech they were supposed to, but I went a bit off track towards the end. I didn't quite get to the, well, it's all much better nowadays, obviously, ho ho, bit that's supposed to make people leave the room thinking that they don't actually need to do anything. I deviated a bit. I hit the topic about why people build these authoritarian systems where the lower echelons don't get a say, and why those systems then degrade in effectiveness the longer they persist. I turned the mirror back on the audience, so to speak. Before the cameras, I gave what Aslan would later refer to as my game and metagame piece. And they didn't like that. All those managers, political figures, academic administrators, they got to see themselves through my eyes. I made an observation, not on bioform this or animal that, but on society as a whole. And abruptly, I had overstepped. I got fewer invitations after that and to rather less salient events. More than that, though, I could sense some great unseen machinery of the world turning away. I was abruptly no longer amusing when I danced. The establishment was reminding me that all I had, I owed to its forbearance. No pun intended. Not a sudden fall, then, but a long, slow plummet. And all those people who had always loathed the idea of a talking bear, a free bioform, an educated animal who could use longer words than them, were waiting with knives at the bottom. So this next part, it happened right after I left Aslan's offices. Even as I was leaving, in fact, I started to pick up the edges of electronic chatter. The presence of covert channels just bleeding into my awareness, because my electronic sensor suite was good when they made me, and I've only improved on it since. Hum OS, I thought. Because, like she said, she was on the run. All of her. And if they caught any individual unit, well, it wasn't as though it would blow her whole network wide open, but it would inconvenience her. She was finite, and new units were a significant investment of resources and secrecy for her. My channel.
Trouble.
Hum OS's channel.
I know. They don't have me yet, but they know I'm about.
I imagined Jemima Gray hurrying through darkened streets, bundled in a coat, beret pulled down low. I imagined her in a car, sunglasses at night to fox retinal scans. I imagined helicopters with search beams, roadblocks, worse. My channel.
I will cover for you.
No reply from her. But I started making a nuisance of myself in the electronic world. Specifically, I started spoofing dissent signals. I'd done the theory, after all. I'd published papers. I knew exactly what one node of a distributed intelligence network looks like when it's trying to reconnect with the whole. And when questioned later, I would say that it had been an idle experiment, just an academic playing games, and did you really think I was in my car by then, which had been designed as a six-seater family transporter, but basically only had the one reclining seat in the back. One major advantage of modern vehicles was that they drove themselves, and this was so much the norm that actually getting a personal driving license was insanely difficult because random, unpredictable people didn't mesh well with the great mass of net-linked auto-drive vehicles. Even when I was young and quick, I'd never much cared for driving myself around. And now I didn't have the eyes or the reflexes for it. Much better to lounge back and pop a handful of hazelnuts and let the car do its thing while I messed with the heads of whoever was after Hum OS. The downside to auto-drive vehicles was that when the authorities decided to flag you down, you couldn't go all Thelma and Louise on them in a mad chase to avoid apprehension. They gave the car its orders, and it just slowed down to a responsible stop on the roadside, and this was exactly what happened to me. I remember looking at the dashboard and seeing that a valid stop and search request had come in that I was obliged to comply with. And right then I thought they were just after Hum OS, and didn't even worry much about it. I waited in the car for a knock on the window. I was even anticipating a little amusement at some human police officer's alarm at seeing an OS that was far less hum than he'd been anticipating. Instead, there was a booming voice, a dog's bark augmented enough to rattle the chassis.
"Step out of the car with your hands out and open."
I unshaded the windows and took a look outside. There was a big police cruiser out there, certainly large enough to haul a bear away in, and two smaller vehicles, too. A handful of human officers were hanging back, but between me and them were a dozen dog bioforms, all in uniform, all of them serious combat models, the sort more used to military functions than policing traffic. Their badges and logos showed that they were a private outfit licensed for law enforcement, not the dwindling regular police. My cars on board processed their credentials and found no fault with them. But I had a bad feeling about just who might be signing their paychecks. My channel. I may be in some trouble here, but I wasn't getting through. I caught a big ECM field coming from the cruiser, and when I tried to hack it, I found enough hardened systems that it wasn't going to fall over in a useful period of time. Someone had done their forward planning. I told the car to open the door before they did it for me, and I slid my bulk out into the open with creditable slowness, paws held high. The dog sloped forwards a little. They all had heavy-caliber automatic weapons designed precisely for the takedown of larger bioforms such as themselves, such as me. And I was an old, tired bear with my fur going gray, and my fighting days were long behind me. I'd thought about some sort of clever remark such as, "Did I steal your picnic basket, officer?" And then I thought better of it, because that kind of nonsense gets you shot. Instead, I just asked politely, "What seems to be the problem?" The lead dog got closer. And there was that interesting little moment of connection when we both accepted that he was within reach of my claws, and I was in range of a lunge from his teeth. Not that either of us would, you understand, but there's something very deeply buried in us both that has the tape measure out. And I glanced past him at those human officers staying well back and reflected that, with people and bears and dogs, some things never change. But I will not allow myself to be baited.
"Dr. Honey Medici," the lead dog said.
"He's the biggest, and that's because humans will generally promote a bigger dog, in the belief that's all there is to pack mentality. I have myself published papers about the alpha fallacy, but nobody seems to take any notice, and that, I suspect, is because a lot of the people who otherwise might are those who like to think of themselves as alphas and want the world to work that way." "I am, yes," I confirm. "I mean, I'm the only bear here. Who else is Honey, if not me?" The dog is a little hesitant, unexpectedly. Then I see the little medallion pinned to his uniform chest. It's a cross with a dog's head in the center, not a spectacular piece of heresy, but a genuine article of faith. The sons of Adam are man's best friends, and a group with whom I have a rocky relationship. Mostly negative on my part, but that dog's head at the nexus of the cross is painfully familiar. Saint Rex, who died for my sins, who died that we might live. And this dog soldier knows that Rex and I, we were close. It won't give me an escape route, but it might win me something, some concession somewhere along the line.
"Dr. Honey Medici, you are under arrest under accusation of sedition, illegal association, and aiding the representatives of prohibited groups under the Criminal Association Directive. You are being taken into confinement for questioning and may subsequently be charged. Your full cooperation is requested and will be taken into account when charges are considered. If you remain silent or refuse to answer questions, then authorities and the court may draw appropriate inference from your unwillingness to assist inquiries."
"I wish to exercise my right to an attorney," I told them, "because they didn't have to remind you about that. And it's up to you, as a free and responsible citizen, to know your rights." The old Miranda had lost a lot of fruit off her hat in the past few decades. "I've literally just left his office. Drop here, Jammingfield, and I'll call him now." He paused a moment, meaning he was bouncing this up the chain through some closed channel I couldn't access.
"You'll get your chance once you're in custody," he said after a few seconds. "Into the cruiser, please, and surrender control of your vehicle so we can impound it."
I looked around. I was still downtown. Lit windows spilled all the way up the old buildings on either side, all those late-night workers still putting the hours in. Cars slid past in a constant chain, and while their passengers might try to rubberneck, the vehicle's auto-drive systems wouldn't slow them. I was right there in full view, a bear at bay, ringed by the dogs whose masters kept prudently out of reach. I was in the heart of America, a published academic, an author, a TV celebrity, and nobody would stop, and nobody would care. In that moment, I was nothing more than an animal, and if I'd fought, they'd have gunned me down. They didn't get Hum OS, or at least Gray, or local branch operative. I know this because we didn't go straight to any police station, holding cell, or similar place of incarceration, but just drove around aimlessly for over an hour, obviously looking for someone that we never found. I have no doubt that they knew who I was meeting with and that the war Hum OS was fighting with various security forces was getting hotter. I did dare hope that, in the absence of actual evidence, they might let me go with a stern talking to. No such luck. They collared me. Small, see. There was a rack of big metal rings in the cruiser's interior, and they put a heavy collar on me and chained me to one. It wasn't exactly dignified. The world has come up with less humiliating ways of restraining any size or shape of bioform. It wasn't entirely an atavism, though. Plenty of nations still used such methods, or worse. After all, there were easier platforms to argue for than humane treatment of dangerous animals that had gone far enough to end up in custody. Dangerous animals, wicked animals, fit only to be treated as such. Even if the crime in this case was holding political opinions unpopular with a resurgent element of the U.S. state and some of the world Senate. Two of the police dogs were in the back with me, still armed and with those guns pointed at me. Both of them had the same cruciform badges, which filled me with an extra layer of depression. And true, there were the very rare times when the existence of the Sons of Adam had played into my rhetorical hands. An association of bioforms, almost all dogs who were practically socially acceptable. But they were acceptable because they bought into the creed that they knew their place. They'd got religion, you see. About 10 years after Rex died, when the world was going through another fit of bioform fear, there was a Vatican priest named Father Giacomo Ionescu. This was long after the walk back at the papal pronouncement about bioform souls, so we were on the table to be saved along with natural-born people, even though regular dogs and bears and the rest weren't. It was a mire of theology, asking at what point in the eminently human-run process the soul got in. It kept a lot of very abstract religious thinkers very busy. Other religions were still on the fence or had come down against the idea, but there had been the odd progressive pope. And when the old boy comes out with something in a public address, it's hard for the establishment at large to pretend it didn't happen. Father Ionescu had appointed himself chief missionary to the animals, a Latter-day Saint Francis. He had actually listened to what bioforms were saying, and he'd worked out that a great many of us were very insecure about our place in the world. Not just that mainstream humanity's mind might shift again on the topic of what we are and what rights we're entitled to. No. The uncertainty that Father Ionescu identified was more existential. What, after all, were we? We were artificial beings made out of natural beings. Where did we fit? What was our purpose? A lot of us, especially the dog forms, covertly yearned for a simpler time when we were just told what to do. And Rex would have understood that. Not agreed, I hope, but understood. And even I remember those days. No rights, no responsibilities, no knowledge of good and evil. So arose the creed of the sons of Adam, not Cain and Abel, but the other living things given into his dominion by God. The purpose of bioforms, said Father Ionescu, was to serve mankind, and in doing so they would find their own way to the heavenly kingdom. And although the philosophy fell on my ears like a wet fish, he won a lot of adherents, and the cult has never really gone away. And wearing the dog cross looks good when you're going for a job with the security services or certain companies. A lot of people have even told me I should speak out in support of them as a force that brings humans and bioforms closer together. Except, of course, it brings them together in a very specific relationship, and that is master and servant. And if I'd been happy with that, then I wouldn't have done all the many and varied things I've done over the last 50 years, frankly. But some bioforms, some dogs, get anxious. And they want to trade all the agency I've won for them, sell it for a certainty that seems utterly spurious to me, but infinitely reassuring to them. I knew him, you know, I said tiredly, as the cruiser swung another left and we swept the area one last time. I mean Rex, of course, not Father Ionescu, although I did meet the man once. For what it's worth, he wasn't the political tyrant I'd been expecting, but well-meaning men can cause just as much damage, if not more. The lead dog stared at me for a long time, and I almost missed his small nod. I was his friend. I was with him from the start, I went on. I could talk forever about all the things I did for Rex, many of them behind his back, because he wouldn't have understood.
I know who you are,
the dog told me in that angry voice that was the only one a lot of the military-built models got. Adding new voice functions is big biomod business for bioforms that have worked out their contract, but perhaps he would have considered it hubris. He met my eyes, and I could see it cost him some effort. He was ashamed. He wanted to look away.
I'm sorry it has to be like this, he said. You have stepped from the path.
There's a difference between accusation and conviction, I pointed out. But I knew that, for him, there wouldn't be. He did what he was told, and that was his cardinal virtue, both in his job and in his theology. He would tell himself it made him a good dog. What's your name, soldier? I asked him, thinking he wouldn't say.
Scout,
he said. And then at some message on his closed channel,
you're to be taken to the shambles.
That wasn't the place's name, of course. It was the Rhodes Point Bioform Holding Facility, and I hadn't even realized it was still in operation. And likely, Scout didn't even know what the old word shambles meant.